Love is not a big enough word. It's not a big enough word for how I feel about my wife.
To the wives.
To the wives!
So who's going to be the straight man and who's going to be the Del Griffith? I'm Neil Page. Why would we even discuss that? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the movie calendar. My name is Lee.
And I'm Terrence.
And this week, we're going to be talking all about John Hughes's amazing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Actually, that's a long title. I wonder how we're going to fit the graphic into here.
We use two lines.
Okay, easy. Perfect. Thanks, editor.
That's what people do. It's a semi-sentence.
I'm trying to find long film titles just to try and flex Terrence's skills a little bit.
We got it sussed. We got the YouTube thumbnails. Room will fit on it. It's just about where you watch this. Will the title be truncated? And we just look and see. Episode 24. Is it 24?
That's a good question.
You'll see. You would have seen it. I think it's 24.
Yeah, it will appear at the bottom of the...
fit in your app?
Episode 24. Here we go.
I always get mixed up. I always say trains, planes, but that's not. It's planes, trains, and automobiles.
Planes, trains, and automobiles.
In order of size. When we talk about jumbo planes.
In order of the...
the modes of transport.
The modes of transport that they take one after the other.
Yes. Planes, trains. Yep.
Although they skip buses because...
Hey, buses are an automobile.
Buses are gross.
They don't skip it. They go on it. I love buses. I get buses all the time.
Terrence drives buses.
They're so good for germ collecting when you have to hold the handrails.
Make sure you sanitize your hands. Wear a mask. Gross.
I was reenacting one of the scenes.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to definitely talk about that scene as well as many others. This film is wonderful. It's so joyous and so sweet. If you haven't seen it, please check it out. We are going to be discussing the film as if you have seen it. So full spoilers ahead. Not that there's too much to spoil, maybe a couple of things, but it's definitely one that you will want to watch before listening to us dive into it. This episode is going to be heavy on characters, writing, John Hughes, I'm going to give a big shout out to because of the influence that he had over cinema before, during, and after the release of this film, as well as, of course, getting into a regular scheduled programming of our hashtag WhatAboutWhens and placing the film on the movie calendar. I wonder what day it's going to go on.
Remember, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at the Movie Cal on both. Email us if you've got long bits of feedback you want to give us, or you've got some ideas or whatever it is you just want to have a chat. themoviecal@gmail.com, and our website is themoviecalendar.com.
Perfect. We did get an amazing email from a good friend of the show, Tobias, right after we finished recording the Fight Club episode. So we're so sorry, Tobias. You had some amazing insights into the film. Some things that I had written down at some point, but we didn't have notes for that episode. It was very ad hoc. So sorry if we missed those bits. But thank you for the email. Keep the contributions coming. We really love it. Feel free to reach out to be a part of our little podcast here. And we'll keep on trucking.
Yeah, we'll keep going. This film, I think I've seen it once before. You know, honestly, I know I've seen it. That's why I liked it. But I
hope
remember,
you've seen it.
Yeah. I just couldn't remember when I'd seen it. It was that long ago. But it's one of my earliest films that I have of watching where Steve Martin is a character. So Steve Martin and John Candy, I don't think we mentioned that, the two leads in this film.
First movie that they'd ever appeared in together.
Really?
Yeah.
I think my first Steve Martin movie was Roxanne.
Mine too.
Really?
Yeah, with the nose.
So good.
That's probably a bit problematic now,
the
that film.
The joke scene in the bar. I can't even remember the jokes. They're probably all politically incorrect and everything, but it was just
he drinks the glass of wine through his nose.
Yeah, it's really weird. So that was my first Steve Martin movie, and I can't remember my first John Candy movie, but you know, I like that in this movie he references Cool Runnings.
There is a Cool Runnings reference. I love him in so many of his films. Uncle Buck, I think, might have been the first one that I saw of him. Blues Brothers as a side character. In there as well, he plays not the sheriff, but some. Yeah,
is he one of the police?
He's part of the police tracking down the Blues Brothers. But he is just marvelous, John Candy. I'm going to be talking about so much during this episode because I just won't be able to help myself. He is just a darling,
and his mo is extraordinarily creepy.
Yeah.
And extraordinary.
It was very 80s, we'll say. There's a lot of 80s things in this film.
Very gross mo.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he pulled it off. I think he looked very sweet.
It worked well for his character. Yeah, it ended up being a really sweet kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was just, it made his character so, so much more funny.
Yeah, but if you haven't seen the film and you want to stick around and listen to us, that's absolutely fine as well. The movie's essentially about this kind of stuck-up ad executive named Neil Page, played by the great Steve Martin, who has to get home to Chicago for Thanksgiving, and it all kind of goes awry, and he is accompanied by the sweet, lovable, somewhat obnoxious Del Griffith, played by the irreplaceable John Candy.
Yeah,
and it's about them trying to get back to Chicago together and all of the mishaps and adventures along the way. It's beautiful.
Yeah, buddy. What did you call it before? Just before we started recording, what kind of film?
It's like a buddy odd couple road movie.
Buddy odd couple road movie. It's like a body ad. Road couple.
Yeah. Boy, I didn't say body.
I can't say that thing fast. I don't know. But that's a really nice description of it.
Yeah.
Odd couple.
There's been lots of odd couple films before in cinema and literature and history. Like, it's a very classic kind of storytelling structure of just putting two people that are so opposed in their views together, because it just makes for such comedy and for such drama.
Yeah,
which this movie has in spades.
There's perfect conflict written into the scenario, and anything you can create is going to be totally relevant to... Any situation is going to create a dichotomy of opinion.
Everything gets heightened. Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they butt heads so much. As well as joining that with the road movie, with people on a journey and an adventure. It was it was waiting to happen, and it just took John Hughes sitting down and painstakingly getting this script out over the 3 days that it took him to write this movie. That is crazy. And I'm going to talk about all of that we'll put like a John Hughes segment in, because he is, again, well worth the praise. But would you like to jump straight in?
Well, yeah, I just want to say, I wonder how this film was received when it was released. So big 80s film, all the cliches of 80s filmmaking are all in here. You know, the music is a big part. If you don't know how to feel as an audience, we're going to play this music here so you know how to feel right now. I wonder how this was felt in the US with it being around Thanksgiving. You know, obviously a holiday film, it served its purpose. I wonder if people actually sat and watched this at Thanksgiving. I'm guessing that's when it was released.
Yes.
But is this a repeated watch for people, do you think? Like certain Christmas movies are for people, you know, certain periods, we'll watch them again. Is this that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, this movie was huge when it came out. It topped the box office when it was released. This movie was a behemoth. I mean, you've got John Hughes, John Candy, and Steve Martin, who were all massive at the time and had never worked together before.
Yeah, true.
John Hughes had just come off doing... Like, his previous 4 films leading up to this were... I might be able to do this in order. Pretty in Pink, The Breakfast Club, Weird Science, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So all teenage angst, kind of looking through the lens of young people storytelling. And so this was the first time that he'd kind of, you know, quote unquote, gone adult by having his lead characters be adults with adult problems. Everyone was into this film, as well as, you know, of course, the two leading stars being the funniest people on the planet.
Adult problems where one of them was just acting like a child the whole way.
Yeah. Yep. And not the one that you would think.
Exactly.
They're both acting like children.
What a great... Yeah. I don't know. One has a really great attitude towards life.
Yeah.
Through utter heartbreak.
Yes. Let's not get too ahead right now. Terrence has assured me before we started recording that he is not going to mess with the set tonight.
No touching of the books.
Please, oh my God.
I just touched my mic stand.
Oh no.
That offends me more than it.
Sorry if you heard a little bang That's right. Our editor will take it out. Don't look at the bookcase.
I was so
if you go back and you watch last week's episode, it was the first time that we were in the same room together. We were recording over a video chat before then. And in the first kind of few minutes of the Fight Club episode.
Fight Club last week, go watch it.
You see Terrence mess with the books.
I'm
a very Neil Page in a lot of ways, but I'm also a lot of Del Griffith in a lot of ways.
I could be a bit more Del Griffith than you can be Del Griffith.
Yeah, no, very much so. And I've watched it back and the reaction on my face is hilarious. I have an out-of-body experience and I almost just shut the podcast down, so...
I have certain amounts of respect, and amazing. I'll respect that for the time being.
This makes no sense to people listening to us on their favorite podcast app of choice. We are on YouTube as well, if you want to check us out there. There's a lot of cool stuff. We put up some new posters tonight as well, to kind of cover the shoddy blinds that are in my spare bedroom here.
That's all right. You'll hear some cars going in the background as well. We can't stop that.
Very high. I tried. A high production value here. I tried. I'd reach out to the council and...
Put traffic cones in the middle of the road.
Stop the street. And they said no.
Put a large detour sign at the intersection so no one comes past.
Yeah.
Should have done it on the other way because they're still coming through.
Yeah.
I did half my job. No, I did my half of the job.
And I didn't do anything.
Great one.
I supply the house.
That's true. Which you already did half of and I supplied. Anyway, I think we should continue. We're going
to
get back
to
the
movie now. Yeah, so Planes, Trains and Automobiles, directed by John Hughes. This has to be one of the sweetest movies that I have ever seen or exists.
Ever?
It is gorgeous. I love this film.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a sweet movie. I wouldn't say it's the most sweetest one I've ever seen.
It has more heart and warmth than it deserves to, if I'm honest.
The writing has
a lot. So beautiful.
Yeah, look, Del, and that's where Del's character is the driving force behind that, and it has to be to balance out the whole film through the whole way, because the equally opposing emotion comes out of Neil's character. So in terms of the most sweetest film, I wouldn't put it in there, but definitely an easy watch and a lovely watch. It was really nice to watch it again, and I said I can't remember the first time I've seen it, but it was over a decade ago, easily, maybe even over 2 decades ago, to be honest.
1987, the movie came out.
Yeah, I watched it after then. After it
was made. Yeah, well, if you watched it before, I would have been very impressed.
So I did like it, and I did enjoy it. And this is the film to watch when you're in that mood, or on a certain day of a calendar to be announced.
We will give you very soon.
But you are allowed to, while we want you to stick to the rules, first rule of the movie calendar is to talk about the movie calendar. Second rule of the movie calendar is to watch the films that are on the movie calendar on the movie calendar dates. But if you want to watch other dates every now and then, you can do that. And this is the one, I think, to put on a day.
No, you can't.
I didn't touch your books. It's fine.
That's not the premise. We give you a day to watch the film, and you are legally obligated to watch those movies on that day. Otherwise, the cinema police will come and get you.
That's great. Just give me a call. I'll give you a free pass. This is one to watch when you...
Vegan police!
You don't know how to feel. You're like, I don't want something too heavy. I don't want blood and guts. I don't want... I don't want violence. I don't... Nothing too brain-hurty. This is a good one.
Yeah.
This is a good one. A
few swears.
I didn't hear any swearing in this film at all.
Oh, no.
Happened. Holy moly!
Oh, yeah. No, that... that is... We're going to get to it. We don't normally swear on the...
No, we try not to. I have some young children. I don't mind if they have a listen on the ones where we talk about movies where they might be able to watch.
Yep.
Then they could watch this one.
Yeah.
And they've heard swearing in real life. So,
Yeah, but you can be rest assured that you are not going to hear any f**ks or any sh**s.
None.
Or any antiquing, just none of that. You're not going to hear any of that on this podcast.
None of that at all.
It is going to be clean. We're here to have a good time and celebrate cinema.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing...
Yeah, let's keep talking about the film.
The plane strikes.
Have we started talking about it yet?
Yeah, we have. We've talked about lots of things so far. I would love to start to talk about one of the two lead characters. Mm. You can choose who would we like to start off with.
Let's start with Neil.
Neil Page.
The straight up and down executive. He's obviously earning a lot of coin because we learn when he gets on his flight, he's entitled to his business class seat.
That first class.
Was it first class?
It was first class, yeah.
Well, even worse.
Yeah,
even worse. Look, if you buy first class tickets, amazing. You get to enjoy first class, but then to...
You're a bad person.
You know, if you... I would love to fly first class one day. If anyone out there wants to donate a first class flight for me and my wife and my two kids, that'd be great.
If we had a Patreon, but, you know, he would be the perfect spot to plug that, but we don't have a Patreon.
So fair enough, but he became really demanding. And, you know, even business class, he's trying to get in. And no, I have to travel with everyone else. So we realize the type of personality that he is. And that's what we're dealt with at the beginning of this film.
Yeah, we're introduced to him in such a beautiful way. I mean, the opening scene with his boss looking over the different... like the different ads and trying to make a decision, and they're just waiting with bated breath. I think this might be the quietest movie opening that I've ever seen for the first 2 minutes. Is it?
I wrote it down. I have some notes here. I'm going to cheat.
Not a single word is spoken for 2 minutes.
I didn't write down how many seconds, but I wrote 2 minutes and there were nearly no words because there were little bits of dialogue where he whispers to his colleague.
I have to go.
Yeah.
I have to make the flight.
So apart from that, because that was about it, it was 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And how about being that boss? You're cast as, you know, a pivotal point to why this movie played out the way it did.
Perfect.
He had some good screen time. He had like maybe 3 minutes, including right in the end, after credits. He's in there. Was it after credits or just at the end of the film?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it's post credits.
Is there a post credits?
It cuts back to him. And he's still having Thanksgiving dinner on his own.
I completely didn't see that.
He has a whole turkey there on his own, and he's still umming and ahhing over this. And he's eating Thanksgiving dinner. And
I should have known that John Hughes was going to put in a post-credit. Yeah. I'd normally sit and watch through the credits.
He's moved from his almighty high desk near the window that only he gets to sit
still
at,
in the office?
At his throne. He's at the office, but now at the conference room table.
And there's a turkey there.
That's and he's so funny. Eating it. And he had no lines, which means he didn't get paid very much.
That's not how that works.
Absolutely, it does.
That is not how
Absolutely
that works.
Absolutely, it does.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Charlie Chaplin, renowned poor person.
And after that, they changed the laws. Yeah. He would have got paid a lot.
John Hughes takes care of his own.
Well, that's good to know.
He likes spending money on films, which is good. But no, Neil Page, what a great introduction on the plane where he's just so frustrated, or when he's trying to get a cab and you kind of learn that he's got money, he's well off, he needs to get home. We know his motivations. He's willing to pay $75 to get into a taxi to get into the airport.
Which is one of the things that helps you align with him as a character. He's not just a total, you know...
Yes. You can empathize with him.
I'll beep it. Sorry for swearing. You can empathize because he's a family man.
Yep.
And he really wants to get home to his family. I think that was well played at the beginning too.
Yeah, both characters have so many irredeemable yet redeeming qualities about one another. And it's a testament to the writing and how clever John Hughes is. But no, I love his Neil Page's relationship with Del and how it evolves and how they see each other and view each other over the entire course and arc of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you completely understand the frustrations that he's going through, but also you're like, why are you being such a beep, you know, to this poor guy who is honestly just trying to help you out? Yes, he's annoying, but he's doing it out of the kindness of his own heart.
No, he was blinded. He's so self-centered, and his problems are the biggest problems in the world.
Yes.
That's what an entitled person is. Yeah. You know, isn't that the... That could be a definition.
If your kid spills his milk, do you smack him?
Yeah.
So what's that supposed... He doesn't answer the question, by the way, but that scene in the hotel room when it's all escalated and like with the shower and the beer in the bed.
Yeah.
Like that whole scene, and he's just... when he gets out of bed and Neil just goes on this tirade at Del, and it feels like it's just never going to end, where he's talking about how it's like, I could sit in seminar after seminar, like, how can you do it? It's like, I know, Del Griffin. They're like, oh, I know what you mean. The showering salesman is like, here's a good idea when you're telling a story. have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
It's so mean.
Yeah.
So, and he yeah. just keeps going.
And he just keeps going. And it gets to the point where you feel sorry for Del,
yeah.
but you're still laughing at the scene. And then it kind of... the humor keeps going to the point where it becomes funny again. When he's like... pretending to rip the cord. it's just you ripping your own cord talking.
But that's classic Steve Martin, right?
Oh, such good visual comedy.
Now, okay, as a writer, as John, as an accomplished writer as he is, do you think he wrote all that, or was a lot of that Steve riffing?
I think it's both, because I know that John Hughes will he banged this script out in a few days. That doesn't mean that like the script is final. Like, there's obviously a bunch of revisions, like dozens of revisions, or probably not dozens, but in the teens. And the revisions mostly start when the film is cast. And when the film is cast, then he can kind of get the voice of the people. The actor. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when he got Steve Martin and he got John Candy, he's like, cool, I can put it in their voices. And so I would say that there would have been a lot of ad-libbing just because of the sheer comedic genius of those two actors.
And the respect that John Hughes would have. He'd be like, oh, right, we've got these guys. Yeah. You know what? There's this scene.
Let's play.
Let's go in this direction. I've got this line here.
Yeah.
Go nuts. I hope that's how it happened.
Yep. Yeah, we've got to find the real moments. But he would have been pitching stuff for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think... A lot of the times when I see Steve Martin, you know, you see his early stuff, because that was the 80s. You know, he's an older man now.
He's been an older man since he was 22.
I think he's always had white hair, right?
But I think he got to a point where I think he hit 22 years old and he says, I'm going to look 50 for the rest of my life.
I don't know if he decided that, but yes. The running for the cab scene, you know, he does the funny run.
Yeah.
The holding his stuff and his head back. That's where it's from. There are so many things in this film where it's like, that's where that's from. Yeah. And I reckon that's where that's from. What's another one? It might come up later on, but when they catch the bus and there's the couple across the aisle from them that are really heavily making out. And
I know what you're talking about.
Guy looks up and he has takes a picture. It'll last longer. Did that originate in that film?
I don't know. I'm not old enough to know anything that predates that. Whether it was a known expression at the time, or whether John Hughes coined that phrase. Yeah, I have no idea. If you're listening or watching, let us know. Like, hit us up on Instagram or Twitter, or send us an email. An email is probably a bit of a weird thing to do for something so short. But yeah, or comment below if you're on YouTube here. Let us know. Was that line written for this film, or was it the first time that it was said? Coined. There you go. I should have said, was it coined in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
I said it earlier.
Take a picture. It'll last longer. So funny.
That's so good. He has a weird reaction. Neil does as well. I don't know if he was like offended or if he was just blown away by the remark. He's like, okay.
But watching Neil's growth in this film is really nice.
Yeah.
Where he kind of, as frustrated as he is, he does start to see the hardships that, you know, Del has gone through in his life, and sort of starts to see him as a friend. It takes a long time. Like, at the most, he's just an annoyance. He's not even looking for a companion. It's just a convenience thing that they're still together. Like, he doesn't want to be there at all. So he kind of doesn't become dependent, but yeah, really starts to value him as a human being.
The first time, right at the end. The first time you see it, yeah, right at the end, he has that full swing that we all wait for, right? That's the reason we're watching.
And this one hits you.
But I like
you real hard.
The first time it happened, and that's when the train breaks down and they're all walking across the field a mile and a half.
That's the turning point.
Yeah. And I thought that would be a bigger turning point than it was. But it was just like a little, I guess I'll help him, the poor sod, you know. And I thought this was it. Yay, but
like,
buddies.
The Neil Page at the beginning of the film would never have done that in a million years. Seen some poor soul lugging their suitcase across the mud, and he would have just pretended like he didn't see it and kept on going on his day.
And
so
he
had the beginnings of change were there.
I think the only reason that we have this warmth to Del is... To Neil is in that early scene when he's trying to get the cab and he meets a type of person that is even worse than him. The guy who tries to bribe for the cab, to pay for the cab, you know. And that's where I think that humanizes Neil a little bit as well. If he didn't have that interchange, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, It's when he gives the guy, he offers $10 for the cab, no, 50, and then he what is it, what would you say, he just rips out more money as anyone.
No, anybody who would pay $50 for a cab would surely pay $75.
Would certainly pay $75.
Not necessarily.
And then he says, you know, you're a crook. Close. I'm an attorney. Okay, that is the worst human being alive. And that was where you realize Neil, come on, Neil, that's not fair. Something happened to you. So I think all through the movie, he wasn't at that most horrible person level because of that interaction, yeah. I think. So you've got this.
Yeah, you learn in that scene that he thinks that he can just buy his way out of anything. Like money, mm-hmm. money is just a way to get what you want. And when circumstances go against you that mm-hmm. that are completely beyond your control, no matter how much money you have, you really find out as to what kind of person you are. And
yeah.
And yeah, Neil gets confronted with it a lot.
Yeah.
But no, I love when they end up in that, in the second hotel room together, where the cars are being on fire, yeah. and Neil can afford, like, just by the skin of his teeth and his watch.
He sells his watch, right?
Yeah, to be able to stay in the room, and Del is stuck out in the car.
Oh, wasn't that horrible? And yeah. Del tries to sell his Seiko, Casio.
Yeah, it's a Casio.
Oh, the poor guy. I really thought, yeah. No problem.
I have $2.
And for the hotel,
it's like, I'm going to have to say goodnight. Yeah.
That was actually pretty sad to watch.
Like, it's the reality, right? And yeah, seeing him sitting in the car and Neil, you know, out of the kindness of his heart, now, which he has discovered for the first time,
that he has
inviting him in, and they have a great time.
They're
drinking booze and eating junk food
and laughing.
And,
that was actually one of my favorite scenes, if not my favorite scene.
It's beautiful.
It was so relaxed too. Like I realized I wasn't waiting for something to go wrong.
No,
you know, I think
it was your first reprieve from all of the horrible things that have been happening.
And the way John Hughes played this out, to not put any things, like, not any sly looks. Usually 80s films are full of close-ups that tell you exactly what they're thinking. There was none of that. It was all smiling. It was all relaxed. It's like they'd been buddies for ages.
Yeah, why? So why do I feel like I'm at summer camp?
Yes, absolutely.
If you haven't had that in your adult life, give it a try. Like, get some friends, get together when you can, when it's safe to do so. Have some fun. Do what you used to do as a kid, as a teenager. It's something that the soul needs. Like, unleash the inner child within yourself. John Hughes knew it better than most, that you should never let go of that child inside you.
Look at you, all life coachy.
No, yeah.
Do it.
Or don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think it's hugely important.
Yeah. Yeah. And another reason that this film is just a really beautiful watch, you know?
Again, one of the many reasons why I love it so much. And it was really nice to see Neil when he's on the train heading back. And this is a what about when moment for me, so I'm not going to do the entire thing. But when he's going home, he's on the train, on his way home, and he starts thinking about the things that are important to him. So his wife and his kids and the food mm-hmm. that he's going to have when he gets home. And you see these all in
montage
like playing out in his mind. And then he starts reminiscing about the adventure that he'd just been on over the last few days with Del, and kind of seeing it through a different lens and how funny it actually is, and takes a moment to actually think about someone other than himself for once, and think about Del, and puts himself in his shoes and finds out that there's a lot of heartache and tragedy there. And it's just, it's a beautiful moment where his character comes full circle and invites Del into his home for Thanksgiving at the end.
Yeah, he starts to realize that these situations weren't all just mishaps and funny things that happened, that there was a lot of sadness in things, and he was starting to realize with little clues that he'd said. One of the nicest lines, I don't know if this was in that memory montage that Neil had, but where in one of the early stages of the flights being bumped, and they're in some US city, I can't remember which one, where Neil does get a chance to call home.
Where they first land after. Doesn't matter. They go to a lot of places.
Where she says, what are you doing over there? You're meant to be on the way to Chicago, and the flight gets directed. And then Del comes in and they have a little play of back and forth, like, yeah, no, we're not getting there. This is not going to happen.
Yeah.
Del seems to know a lot, but we'll talk more about that when we get to him. But what he says to him is, I have a motto, like your job, love your wife. And that, yeah, I think that,
that
was
not,
one
that
of
one's
the,
not in the flashback.
It's not. Well, no, it no. should be. But there yeah. were a few others
yeah.
where he realizes, oh no, this guy.
I haven't been home in years.
This guy doesn't. There's something missing in his life.
Yeah,
and he's masking
and we'll,
a lot.
And we'll get to we'll that get very there. Soon. I think yeah. Let's talk about Del,
okay.
Because John Candy. I've got a few notes written down here on my phone, and literally one of them is just a dot point that says John Candy is a revelation. He is stunning in this film. Aside from the comedy.
Oh yeah, the comedy.
Yeah, the mustache. The mustache is
and his Parker.
Mildly offensive. No, it's beautiful, and he's a beautiful human. He is like comedy is not easy. Comedy is super hard to do, and it's so effortless for him. He just exudes comedy and humor, but you have to have balance, and you can't have comedy without drama, otherwise the comedy is just not as good. And John Candy brings it in this film. He has so much heart and warmth and character that you can't help but take your eyes off him. And no matter all of the, you know, quote unquote horrible things that he does, he's still so endearing and lovable. And you can't do that unless you have John Candy.
I wouldn't call them horrible, but they seem like totally... Like, why would you do that? What kind of person are you to think that that's the right thing to do? But yeah, his previous films, he is that guy. He is that comedy guy. Is this his first foray into drama, would you say?
Well, yeah, well...
Kind of crosses that.
He's always got a lot of heart in some of the films he does. But yeah, for the most part, he's just straight up a comedian. And
he's the funny guy.
He's the funny guy, right? And I really... really feel bad about the fact that we never got to have a proper John Candy drama, because he would have crushed it. And he flexes those muscles in this film. And you know the scene that I'm talking about, where he has his you want to hurt me speech.
Mm.
And it's my number one what about when, and I'll talk about it again when we get there. In the first hotel room after Neil has just gone on a hilarious tirade.
Yeah. Oh, you already spoke about that.
Towards
yes.
him, yeah. And he just pauses, and the music does a lot of the heavy lifting. Yeah. But even if you take the music out and you look into that man's eyes, and you can tell that he has had this his entire life, and he just has to brush it off. Like people who are so pent up and anxious about little things like that are not worth his time, but he will still go out of his way to try and help them because he is a good person.
And it's something he's realized through, maybe not through the loss of his wife, but the fact that he kind of wraps it up with one of the things he says, my wife loves me. Is that what he says? Oh, my wife loves
me. Yeah, so say what you want about me. Like, I like me.
Mm.
My friends like me. My wife likes me.
So it's...
Because what you see is what you get. I'm the genuine article.
Yeah. His wife would have given him so much confidence in terms of being who he is, and would have hopefully continued to tell him.
I'll cry if I talk about that scene too much.
So, you know, it's that he has enough confidence in himself that those that are close to him have helped him see. And he is a strong enough person to realize this, to even stand up for himself to someone as wordsmithy as Neil Page, to really just go, whatever you say, just no effect, you know? It's but yes, such I, a brilliant
Yes,
brilliant
I talk too
to
much. I also listen too much. He's... Be like Del Griffith.
I nearly regret not watching this with my kids. You know, I think I will sit down and watch it with them.
skip the swear
I'll
scene.
Skip a little. I'll pretend I sat on the remote and muted it. Like, oh, oops.
Oh, what's happening?
Where's
I can't,
the unmute
I can't hear
button?
The film.
It goes for like a minute, right?
It's that scene is exactly 1 minute long.
I'm trying though, and I can't unmute it.
It's so good. You have to have that scene. But no, Del, from the moment we meet him, where they're getting ready to board the plane, I think is where they meet for the first time. They have a little moment in the cab where he's like, hey, get out of my cab. And John Candy looks up and he's like, oh, who is this man who's trying to steal my cab? And he's just staring at Neil, and Neil knows who he is. He's like, it's him. It's the guy who stole the cab.
Does
that
he?
I paid $75
for. Oh,
yeah,
of course. Yeah, he recognizes him immediately.
And Del's like, I know you, don't I?
He's so innocent.
Yeah. It's like... Oh man, I'm normally really good with names, but I'll be damned if I haven't forgotten yours. It's like, so you stole good. My cab. It's like, I've never stolen anything in my life.
Right? He doesn't do anything bad. No.
Yeah. It's bad. It's so sweet. I love that whole scene. And he's just adorable, and he has no idea. And like, the whole scene ends with like, you're the guy who tried to steal my cab. I knew you.
And even though they're both thinking each other stole the cab.
Yeah.
Neil's reaction is, you horrible man. Yeah. I hate you. You put me in this situation. While Del is like, he's feeling like he's been a victim and got away, luckily.
But then the second that he realizes, where you can see him working it out, and he's got a couple of great moments like this, and he's just like, come to think of it, it was really easy to get a cab during rush hour. It's like, oh my God. Like, and then immediately apologizes and tries to make up for it. Like that, like, you learn everything you need to know about him in that one scene. Yeah. And he just sticks with it the entire way.
And it's that beautiful. Seems to be what started the whole thing. You know, I owe this guy something. He couldn't get back to his family. You know, he takes that responsibility of trying to get him back. Yeah. He really does. You know, I've got something interesting about that scene.
Okay.
When they both realize what happens, and I think, where they both realize where they met. And for Neil Page, he realizes immediately. And I think we get a flash frame.
We do.
We get a shot back of John Candy. The scene. Now, okay, I noticed it immediately. It was glaringly obvious to me. But the rest of the people that I was watching with in my household, they didn't notice it. And I had to pause it and I had to go back. Because the scene we see John Candy going, I had to go back. I paused it. Now, if you want to do this, go for it. I might even put it up here.
Ah!
It wasn't... they didn't play back a shot from the New York City.
No, it was a new shot, yeah.
It was a new shot. The airline logo was in the background, and it was a shot... It was like they brought in a New York cab car door into the airport scene and put it in front of Del Griffith's face, wound the window down a little bit, and reenacted it.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and I went back and had a look, and the actual airport scene, the car door is open for the New York Street scene.
The cab scene, yeah.
The cab door is open, so you're not looking through a window. And of course, he's not in an airport lounge. So I don't know what happened there.
The human mind is, when remembering, can be a little bit fickle sometimes. And I think that was just Neil Page just remembering that reaction whilst they were in the scene that they are. But you know, they had
I like to think they ran out of money and they went, they could have just put this here, put a door there. We've sent the film off already.
I think it was purposeful. I think because you could have just put the reaction shot of John Candy from
They did montages scene, already.
But I think they would have deliberately have done it with him in that thing.
To reframe
the context of it, where Neil is realizing that it's him whilst he's in the airport.
That's actually really funny. Because none of the people I was watching realized it.
Yeah.
So if that was the reason behind it, then I applaud John Hughes.
It very much might not be, but I love that as an idea.
I thought it was so good to frame your memory inside of the room that you're currently in. And I thought to act it out again and get John Candy to sit there and pretend like you're in a coming.
Do the face.
With all the people in the airport lounge behind in the background. You can see them. They're all sitting there. So they don't try and hide it.
No.
So you're right. Maybe you're right.
I think it was a choice. Yeah. Like, why else would you do it?
I know.
Like, there is no reason.
Editors.
Yeah.
But no, I was very proud for noticing.
You did very well. I'm proud.
Thank you. Not patronizing at all, but thank you.
Little bit.
I'm going to beep that whole response that you just had.
No, sad.
No, I won't. Yeah. Anyway, I want to mention that to all you keen-eyed watchers out there.
Yeah, I think, John Candy, when, like, casting him in this film was the best decision that I think John Hughes and the production company made. Him obviously. And his counterpart.
And look, we speak about this quite a bit. And especially in last episode in Fight Club, where we talked about the casting and how they were relevant, so you get an idea of the person without even them talking. Just the look, that there's the plain, straight guy. And that's a lot of the time in a duo, right? There's the straight guy and then there's the funny guy. Okay, these guys are both funny guys.
The neat and the slob.
But to be the neat and the slob. So to be able to cast like this, because... you could almost flip them.
Well, both of those actors are so talented. Yeah. They could have done that. Yeah.
And, you know, you said we don't... It was a pity we didn't see a John Candy straight guy film. But, you know, I think Cool Runnings actually is that. He's down on his luck. He's ex-success, whatever. Yeah. But he kind of plays a straight guy, film. Right? Yeah. And he's redeeming himself in that. We're not talking about that film now, but I think in terms of John Candy, I think that might be his straightest one so far that I've seen. Yeah. So far? Oh, unfortunately, that he's ever done.
Yeah, yeah. R.I.P. to John Candy. I hadn't... I was going to open the episode dedicating the film... The episode to the late, great John Candy and John Hughes as well.
Oh, has he passed, has he?
Yeah, he passed away in 2009, I think. 2007, somewhere around there. Mm. Late 2000s.
Oh.
But yeah, I love... this is probably while we're talking about Dell, kind of still.
Mm.
It's probably the best time to talk about his story.
Yeah, okay.
Where we learn sort of towards the end when the film's all wrapping up and they've had their beautiful adventure and they're parting their ways and it's, you know, it's sad but sweet. You know, they, you know, finally get to get released from each other's orbit and go on their own separate ways back home. And yeah, we learn during the flashback sequence that Neil Page is having, where he's piecing together the fact that John Candy actually has lost his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I had forgotten, again, it had been a few years since I'd seen the film, and I knew that the wife was no longer in the picture. So yeah. I was still looking at it through that lens. Like I hadn't completely forgotten, but I didn't remember whether she had died or whether they were just separated.
They're carrying around the picture. Yes, I had that same thought.
Yeah, so I was still on the... Oh, like she could still be around. And then when he realizes that the wife's no longer there and gets back on the train and goes back and sees John, he's like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be getting home to your wife. And he says...
Marie
died 8 years ago. I lost it. I was an absolute mess. Mm. And I'd seen it before, like multiple times. And it's probably going to happen again the next time I watch it when we put it on the calendar, and I'll be watching it every single year now. It's
legal. It's law.
Yes, by law. Like, we have to do it. You have to watch it on the date that we give you.
Sorry.
Yeah, not sorry. it's so sweet. And then when you get to watch the film again and watch it through that lens where he has those moments and talks about how he hasn't been home in years and, oh, no, it's just a figure of speech and, you know, my wife loves me. And, yeah, you get to really appreciate John Candy's performance and the writing and, yeah, just the way the entire story is structured.
Wow, I'd like to go on a total, not tangent, but I want to talk about Dell as well.
Well, if we keep it at Dell, then we can do it in this section.
Great. So let's talk about Fight Club. Because there was a moment...
Breaking the first two rules again?
There was a moment with this film where I really had to wonder, was Dell real?
Okay. Sorry, you're getting very serious.
So make that connection to Fight Club. You know, I put, if you follow us on Insta, I put a post advertising that we were going to put Fight Club and saying next week was Planes, Trains and Automobiles. And someone actually said to me, what, are you making a connection between the two films? And I laughed it off. Don't be silly.
There are actually quite a few connections between the two movies. Like they have their meet cute on the aeroplane.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, they do meet before, but it's aeroplane related.
It's aeroplane. Yeah, they're together on an aeroplane.
Wow. Well, look, I did seriously think that one
punches the other.
Maybe not in terms of them being the same person, but I did for a while think, is Dell an angel? Is Dell
getting very philosophical?
Yeah, and spiritual, because Neil learns a lesson. Neil has these experiences that allow him to learn certain aspects of character that he has either forgotten in life or has never had to shed before.
He's the ghost of Thanksgiving's past.
Similar to that, right? Until there were interactions that Dell had with third parties.
And Dell kind of carries them throughout a lot of the story as well.
Adele is a well-connected man. Yes, that is he knows someone in every corner of the globe. I mean,
he's, you know, he works for American Light and Fixture Shower Curtain Ring Division. Like,
best
he is,
in the world.
He is the most connected person on the planet.
How cool is that little shower curtain ring wallet that he has?
Oh, man.
That is so... I love when he does that. And when he takes his shoes off in the plane and then his socks come off.
He's so proud of what he does.
Oh, and he won't he won't defend himself to any... Oh, he'll defend himself, but he won't answer to anyone as to who he is. Anyway, I did really think, is Del an angel sent? Is there something going on here? And that's my connection with Fight Club. Yep. But
I love that idea of like finding something like really deep in a movie that's sort of this old and this classic.
Look,
I think you're kind of looking into something that's not there.
No, look, I don't think I'm far off it.
That's he's really
not
fun.
He's not an angel, but he is a person who has come into someone else's life.
He is an angel.
He's a
living angel on the earth, or he was. Yeah.
Well, look, I think it's the way most things are. People come into people's lives. They have interactions that sometimes, you know, we hate and we wish we didn't have them, but really... everything we do leads to where we are now. All right, talk about philosophical. So that was something that was extremely important to happen, because through this interaction, I've said that a lot this episode, this exchange, Neil has a growing fondness for his own family, not just through not being able to get to them, but he realizes how important his wife is, that he's always that she's always there for him, through understanding that she may not always be around, you know. Yeah.
Everyone has something that they're going through. Person you meet,
Know their story.
Yeah, it's a really good thing to keep in mind, and you learn it at some point in your life. And if you haven't learned it yet, take a moment to think whenever you're in a situation where it could be getting a bit heightened or some frustrations that are starting to boil, is you don't know what's going on in people's lives. And also, every single person that you meet knows something that you don't. So get to know your neighbors, your friends a little bit better, your family.
And don't burn your bridges.
No.
Because like Del, he was able to use all of his bridges in this tough time to help out another person in the world who
They go into that hotel for the first time, when the airport shut down and he's like, you called home, I called the Braidwood Inn, and they go in there and Gus, who is the hotel manager, is behind the thing, and just... the smile that he has on his face when he sees Del Griffith, how are you? And comes out like he's a shining light in every room he goes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People love him.
Yeah.
People love him. And how he can just ask for a room for his mate, you know, for nothing, which is great in the other scene where Neil gets a room but doesn't even ask or offer a hand. Anyway.
When he's sitting in the burnt out husk of a car and it's snowing and he's just talking to himself.
He's talking to Marie. Yeah.
Oh, don't cry. And he's saying you blew it. You found someone whose company you really enjoy, and what do?
You smother it.
You smother the poor soul. And like he's still empathizing with Neil, who has just done nothing but be an absolute prick of a person for the most part up until then, except for carrying his luggage. But he still sees the good in him. He still manages to find the good in people.
See, he's an angel. Maybe he's a saint.
He is.
Is that what the definition is?
I don't know. Just I am one of the least religious people.
Just
in the world.
A really nice person all around. I have a question for you
and
everyone watching. Write in the comments if you think you know the answer. I have a feeling Lee will give me an answer that I may or may not like or accept. Where was Del going at the beginning of the film?
He's a traveling salesman. So he just would have been... He's a drifter.
Okay, that's actually a good answer. I totally didn't even think about that.
But
he doesn't have a home.
He's going to Chicago. I don't think he has... He didn't have kids.
There's no reference to kids.
No. He's a late wife. He's just
all his
nomading around as a traveling salesperson for American Light and Fixture.
I feel like an idiot. Wow. Yeah, all his belongings are in the case. I like that that's the first introduction you get to Del.
I don't have a home, is what he said.
The first scene we're introduced to him is his case.
Yeah.
What Neil trips over as he's running for the cab.
Yeah.
And that's the great, what do you call that? That's the narrative of the whole thing, right? Del is the speed hump. Until Neil learns his lesson, Del is going to help him.
Yeah, so clever.
Gonna smack him in the face.
Del is carrying around massive baggage.
Oh, I like it.
Zing. Yeah, the movie's really, really great. I would love to talk about...
And Neil helps him with the baggage.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Share your load.
Yeah. Share it around. Yeah, don't burden yourself with it all.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's
with yourself.
If you're carrying a lot of luggage, allow someone else to help you carry it.
Yeah. We're getting very philosophical. This was supposed to be like a really quick, short episode.
I said it perfectly. I said it purposefully like that because we could put some music behind it, freeze frame that. We're not going to do that. Put a phone number at the bottom.
We are your phone number. We are. You'd have all of the fun people.
Something that starts with 555. Isn't that what they do in the US movies?
Yeah. 555. Put Marla Singer's phone number up there.
Or Tyler's. They're both given in
Tyler's phone number's fake. I would... Yeah, love to talk about John Hughes. I'm not sure how we're doing for time.
All right, let's talk about
John Hughes. But John Hughes had such a huge impact on cinema when he was making films. Like he was a legitimate genius when it came to filmmaking and writing. Like, this man's writing ability was insane. We mentioned the fact that he wrote this film in 3 days, which wasn't abnormal for him. Like, that was the usual behavior. Like, he would write a script, he would give it to the production company, and they would say, cool, like, these are the notes that we have, fix them up and get them back to us next week. And he would like sit outside the office that he picked the papers up from and do the rewrites in an hour.
Would he use, they didn't have like computers easily accessible then. Yeah,
typewriter.
The electric typewriter, probably.
Right, probably.
But hard buttons.
Yeah, so he would, that's what he did, because he used to be an ad writer, much like Neil Page. Like he got out a lot of his
copywriter.
Own.
Yeah.
Like he was an ad writer. Much like the character of Neil. Drawing from real life experience, like write what you know, and which is partially the reason why he probably was able to get it out so quickly. And the entire film is based off of a true story where John Hughes himself was trying to get back to his home of Chicago during Thanksgiving, and really? It took him 5 days to get home because it was all snowed out, and that was the inspiration for the film.
Man, that would suck living in a place
where
it's sunny in one area and then snowy, blizzardy in the other, and you have to commute between them.
Yeah, couldn't imagine.
Here in our land, sweating right now.
Yep.
Okay, it's coming towards heading in the summer.
But it doesn't really get winter where we live.
It's so cool.
I love it. It's the best. It's the reason I live here. I talk to people all the time, my friends, that are just like, oh, it's so hot, I hate it, I'd love to move somewhere colder. I'm like, why do you live here? just move. There's so many places that you can go. But no, I live here for the warmth and the climate. I love it.
It's so good here. It's so good.
It's the best.
Okay, so I'm just going through a couple of notes as well.
Right. Do you have some John Hughes stuff that you want to talk
about? Yeah, relating to the connections he has with the 80s films that shaped the industry or the genres, right?
Yeah.
Of course, in the opening the very first thing that I realized was, oh, that's the dad from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And then, oh, that's the teacher from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And then, oh, that's the school admin lady from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I realized,
how many more can you do?
Well, I can't do any more because they were the only three. And then I thought, I wonder if this guy has anything to do with that film. So, of course. And I didn't know. I try to go in a little bit blind if I don't remember too much about the film and just watch it fresh.
Yeah.
So, IMDb.
Terrence is not the cinephile between the two of us. That's more my department. So, it's super fun to watch you, like, figure these things out and realize them.
Cool.
Because John Hughes had like a bunch of actors that he enjoyed working with and would bring back again and again.
It was so nice to see. And of course, it was lovely. He worked with John Candy multiple times.
I think my favorite of the cameos, I guess you would call them in this movie, is the airport announcer, who is also the school teacher in Ferris Bueller, who does the Bueller.
Him. Yep.
Bueller. And yeah, just the airport announcement where he's saying that the I don't remember the flight number, but flight to Chicago has been cancelled. And the smile that he gives afterwards, that was a direction from John Hughes. He'd done the scene a few times and he says, just do it again and smile at the end. And that was the take that they used. So good.
I wonder if anyone's listening or watching that works in an airline, do you get any joy out of delivering horrible news over the PA system?
Oh, yeah. I guess there would be some of you that you would. If you're having a bad day, maybe.
And you're just finishing your shift.
Yeah, because otherwise you can have all the angry people coming up being like, I'm going to yell at you for something that is completely out of your control.
That is such a tough job.
Settle down, Neil.
I've seen people at those service counters and at the ticket counters getting like, totally...
Like you understand that they haven't stopped the flight, right? Like they didn't make that decision. Like they don't run the airport. Check yourself a little bit. I understand your frustrations, but just relax. Everything's going to be fine. The world isn't going to stop turning on its axis.
We have phones now. We can call those people that are important to us and say, you know what? The flight got delayed. They'll understand.
Yep. Yeah. Don't rush. Don't rush. That's how accidents happen.
Yeah. No, that's what I wanted to mention. The use of those
the
characters.
Extra, the actors. Yeah. There's so many in this film. Yeah. Then I mentioned before that, you know, John Hughes was kind of stepping outside of his comfort zone with this movie, where he had normally only done sort of teenage comedies before, or teenage dramas, where it was, it was Pretty in Pink. I'm not going to be able to do the
Breakfast
this time. Or Breakfast Club, Weird Science, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah, and Uncle Buck came after. And yeah, then he did this. So this was the first one with like adults in it. And yeah, the headlines were all, you know, John Hughes's first adult comedy,
Really?
Which you can kind of take however you like.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really good, and he was so comfortable in this world. He absolutely nailed it, and yeah, we're so thankful to have this movie in existence in our lives and to be able to put it onto the calendar. So yeah, thank you to John Hughes and all involved. You did an excellent job.
Cheers. Is that a thing? Oh yeah, you got a drink now. Cheers.
Not with water.
Clink.
Luckily, this is gin.
We didn't cheers at all. Well, we cheers the camera.
Yeah. Cheers to you.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to us.
The world.
I'm just trying to... I'm just going to have a look through a few of my notes. You want to vamp for a little while?
I'll vamp a bit. About what? What's vamping?
I'm not good at it.
Oh, let me show you some of the things on the
shelf. Don't touch the shelf. My God. Okay. I'm not giving Terrence free control of the pot ever again. I have now learned my lesson. Thank you for teaching me.
That was great.
I very much appreciate it.
I love
it.
The freedom of being able to talk about and do whatever I want. Let me read to you from page 35
of
Bong Joon-ho's...
A few of the things that I learned about this film when I was sort of doing some research were mostly all about John Hughes, it being based off of real life. This is John Candy and Steve Martin's favorite film of their own.
Oh,
not their favorite film
that's
out
nice.
Of cinema, because that would be a little bit narcissistic.
The favorite film that they've been
that
in.
That they are in, yeah. It's their favorite, which I can absolutely see. And they've been in some brilliant films before.
Is this their only film they've done together?
I think so. I don't know if they did anything after this. I don't know that for sure. John Candy died pretty soon after.
He
within a decade,
passed
I
in
think.
The 80s, right?
No, I think he may have gone into the 90s.
Okay.
Because he did Uncle Buck after this. This was 87, okay. And then he did Uncle Buck, which John Hughes wrote and directed for John Candy so that they could work together again, because they enjoyed working together
and
so
cool
much.
Cool Runnings came out much later anyway.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, of course he was in the 90s. God, stupid me. It's so hard to believe that we live in a world without him. We're glad that he have his work to be able to reflect on.
Yeah.
John Hughes kind of wrote films more quickly than he could kind of keep up with himself. So he wrote in the 80s alone, John Hughes wrote 18 major motion pictures and directed 7 of those 18. Like, that is a streak that is insane.
Over how many years? In the 80s?
Just in the
80s.
Just
in a decade.
Just in the 1980s.
He must have like savant capabilities with this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Insane. Absolutely insane. The man was a movie making miracle. Yes.
Movie making miracle.
Terrence just mouthed the words, which is no good if you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app of choice. Stop doing that.
You don't mess them up when you just
you don't
mouth
have a pop,
them.
You don't have a pop filter. But yeah, and out of the 7 that he directed, we mentioned Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, She's Having a Baby, and Uncle Buck.
I haven't seen She's Having a Baby.
I haven't seen it either, but that one stars Kevin Bacon, which I know you're excited to talk about when we get to What About When. So, no better time than the present. Would you like to jump into What About When?
Let's talk about What About When.
Amazing. Here we are in hashtag What About When for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, episode 20-something. We think it's 24.
I think it's 24.
We think it's 24. We would love your contributions to this, either on Instagram or Twitter are the best ways to get those to us. We are at The Movie Cal. You can send us a lovely email as well, like Tobias did last week for Fight Club, even though it did come in a little bit too late. But still, thank you again for that. It was a joy to read. Thank you for your kind words. Our email is cal@gmail.com. All of these can be found in the description below, along with all of the time codes, on whether you're listening on your favorite podcast app of choice or checking us out on YouTube. Terrence, do you have any What About Whens?
I do. Look at my phone here. I have some written here. Oh, look, I'm looking at all the other notes going, oh, I didn't talk
I'm
going to
do
that.
A What About When.
Here, okay, What About When? What About When? Oh, I don't have them in order. I have a feeling one might be yours.
Oh, I think we've got a few. We discussed it beforehand, and we've got a few double ups here, which is great because this movie is just full of incredible moments.
I hope you don't have any sequential order you want it to go in.
No, I'm fine.
All right. What Let's About go. When? Two words. Kevin Bacon. How good is that? That was so good.
Yeah. So the studio, I think it was Paramount and John Hughes, were already working on the next film after this one, called She's Having a Baby, which starred Kevin Bacon. And so they were looking for someone to come in to play this kind of other business person from New York. And yeah, who better to get than the amazing, young, handsome Kevin Bacon. And so that's how that came about. Like,
so good.
A huge star for such a small part, but so memorable.
We were playing 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. I don't know. Is that the official name of it? Yeah, we were playing the Kevin Bacon game only like a week before in the house. And when we watched this, we all just went, oh, Kevin Bacon. Just the way they shot it, close up, and he's got that so recognizable face, amazing. And you see his cheeks rise when he has that smirk of, I'm going to race you. I love that. So Kevin Bacon.
And he finally gets to the cab and he's like, ha, I'll beat you.
So good. And suave, doing his hair as he gets in.
That 80s hair. Oh. If you look at pictures of that and then you look at pictures of John Hughes from that time, like, the hair is identical.
Who was John Hughes' icon back then?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it might have been the other Kevin way around. Bacon. I think Kevin Bacon's icon might have been John Hughes.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
So I've got a few What About When moments. And mostly comedic, but there is one dramatic one. What about when Neil and Del are driving the opposite way on the highway and they don't realize and they end up going between the two trucks and it flashes to Neil being a skeleton and Del being the devil just laughing at him? The visual humor was just so unexpected because, like, there hadn't been any kind of fantasy elements to the film before, but God, it was one of the funniest moments in the entire movie.
That was so good. Even the lead up to that, where they're winding down the window talking to the other car.
You're going the wrong way.
How do they know where we're going?
Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Because Neil's a smart guy.
Yeah.
What is going on here?
And he's at the absolute wrong time. He's like starting to trust Del because he's like, how do they know where we're going? He's like, normally he just dismiss Del and listen to the other people. He's like, yeah, you know what? You're right.
That makes him quite content. I never clicked that they're on the wrong side.
On the wrong side of the
in
highway.
In our part of the world, they would have been going.
They would have been
way
on the correct side. Yeah,
That was a great. I love that scene. I love that scene. Okay, what about when? Let me flick down again. What about when Neil? What about when the car bursts into flames?
Oh, and they've got their back to it, and then it's sitting. That. And one turns around and looks, and the other turns around and looks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Because you're waiting for it the whole time.
Yeah.
You know the cigarette's there. It's been planted.
But Chekhov's cigarette.
You kind of forget about it, right? There's so much that happens, you're like, oh, that happened instead. Oh, now they're talking. Oh, man.
And Neil's reaction of just, they're just standing up staring at it and he's just lost it. He's broken and he just laughs. Nothing but he just laughs. And he's just, you finally did it to yourself. And then you realize that the car is actually rented under Neil's credit card instead of Del's.
Oh, man.
It's like, how did you even get a rental car? It's like, oh, I sold them some shower curtain rings. And there's the realization on Neil's face of being like, Del, you can't hire a car with shower curtain rings. It's like, oh, yeah, your credit card found its way into my wallet.
Again,
you stole it.
Chekhov's law.
Yeah.
With the payment of the hotel.
You see the cards get swapped and you're just waiting for it to pay off.
Yeah, that
so
was awesome.
Funny.
Pardon the pun.
I've got a what about when moment that I didn't have written down that I just thought of, and it's when they're in the diner after the first night that they've spent together.
Yes.
And they realize that they've been robbed.
Yes.
Where he's looking through his wallet and he's like, you know damn well what. And he's like, I've been called a lot of things in my life, but never a thief. Like, here's my wallet, there's $276 in there or whatever it is. It's like, if there is a dollar more, then you can call me a thief and a liar. And he opens it up. It's empty. What? And then the slow realization on Dell's face where he's like, we were robbed. Do you think so?
You know, I love that scene too. I was like, oh, this is... Now we're going to find it. Neil's an idiot. You know, he's going to realize... I didn't realize that. Oh, no, they've both been robbed.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. Like, Neil instantly figured it out. And then the slow realization on his face. It's like, it reminded me of... There's a scene in little tiny tangent in Spider-Man Homecoming, which I'm not sure if you've seen or not. But there's a moment where... Ned, his best friend, finds out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, and Peter Parker has been kind of using he's been using the that's fine he's been using the excuse made like $1 billion he's been using the excuse for disappearing a lot because he's doing the Tony Stark internship.
Oh, okay.
And so that's his excuse for disappearing all the time and being Spider-Man. And Neil is like, how do you do this and the Stark internship? And he's like, this is the Stark internship. And there's this like slow realization on Ned's face where he just goes, before he leaves. And it reminded me of that. It's so funny. I wouldn't be surprised if that was inspired from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Ooh, you reckon?
Maybe, yeah.
Nah, it's just a nice reveal.
No, I think the director of Spider-Man Homecoming, John Watts, is a big John Hughes fan. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I don't know. I mean, John Hughes may have coined the phrase, take a picture, it'll last longer. So he's very influential in society.
You would, yeah, absolutely is. Mm. Do you have another What About When?
Yes, I do.
Or plow through a few.
Okay, this is a quick one. Similar scene, same scene as the car lighting on fire. I don't know the exact line. Del says, oh, did I make you mad? Or something like that. Are you angry at me? It's the line that makes Neil... punch him, give him
in the stomach.
Yeah, sucker punch him. Boom. And you're like, oh, what a mean bugger. And then he turns to walk to the car angrily, but falls over the suitcase again.
Pratt falls over. Yeah, instant karma.
Instant karma is going to get you. That is perfect.
What about when Neil goes to get the rental car and it's not there and he has to go back? And he is at the end of his tether and he goes on a massive swearing tirade at this poor woman behind the counter. Is probably the second biggest What About When moment in the entire film for me. It is hilarious.
Now, I don't know what swear word you're talking about, but as I wrote that, that's one of my What About Whens too, because I counted how many of them there were in my phone as I was typing it in. Just, I don't want to say the word, but you might guess it because the spell check was ducking. Who knows? But we're not going to go... We've used our swear quota already.
Yeah. I just love the fact that this scene is in the movie. This was one of the scenes that was in the script that made Steve Martin want to do the movie.
All right, dude. You can do as many of them as you want after you tell us to go. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to swear.
Do it.
I'm not. No. Do it. I'm not going to do it.
So they've used their swear quota.
Yeah. It's so good. The entire scene where he just unleashes. There's no swearing in the entire film except for this one scene. You take this scene out and it's a perfectly happy PG movie, family friendly, and this made it an R rating in the United States.
Really?
Because you can't have more than one F-bomb in a film because then it becomes an R-rated movie. Wow. And it just, you have to have it. The scene is so good. Like, it's that character and everything he's been through, just, it makes perfect sense for him to just unleash on this poor woman who is just like, does the icing on the cake of just being on the phone talking to a friend or a family member. Yeah.
Telling him to wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Just talking about Thanksgiving. Again, that was an improv from her. Yeah. But it was originally scripted that she was on the phone to a customer and they did it a few times. And then John Hughes just asked her, oh, hey, just pretend like you're on the phone to a friend and you're talking about Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And so she improvised that whole thing, including the gobble, gobble, blah, 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 at the end.
That's so in line with every character that she plays, right?
Hello, sir. Can I help you? How may I help you?
You got to finish it. You have to do some of this scene.
Oh,
I can't. I don't know You're very good with the quotes. I write them down sometimes, but right, I just counted.
I can do the. I can. I
counted 17.
Datsun. I want a f-ing Toyota. Four f-ing wheels in a seat. I want a f-ing car right f-ing now. May I see your rental agreement? I threw it away. Oh boy. Oh boy, what? You're f-ed.
So satisfying. Oh, that was awesome. So I think I spoke while you said the first one, so I might beep it. I counted 17.
Hopefully you beep all of them.
I counted 17.
Yeah, I think there's about that many. And it's 1 minute. That scene is 1 minute long. And yeah,
it floored me. It really floored me. I thought, oh, ooh, he's swore. Oh, he's again. Yeah, again.
It just doesn't end. It's like the scene in the hotel room where he just keeps hitting Del with just like insult after insult after insult.
But she delivers it perfectly back to him.
Yeah. Oh man. Which that, and that scene leads into my last one. Do you have one to do before I do my last one?
I have. I say Kevin Bacon, didn't I? The suitcase one, yes. What about when they're driving down the freeway and Del is miming the entire Ray Charles Mess Around song?
Oh, that's so
the
much
entire
fun.
Song.
He's loving it, hilarious. Having a great time. The car swerving all over the
so
road.
So good. And when you see him with
the cigarette in his mouth.
He's such a great time. And just how he does the old catch the wheel and then you see the exterior of the car swerving like this.
It's edited very well, that whole scene.
I just was laughing. I thought that was so beautiful. He's having a great old time.
That song would have cost a fortune.
Yeah. So good. So good. And this is in the other scene. The fingers.
It's my first one about Wayne.
The dash. Ah, oh, yes. Oh, that was good. That was good. I thought before you go to your last one, because I don't have any more. I thought in the going back to the car rental place. A little other what about when in there is when he has a tantrum in the parking lot. That's also classic Steve Martin.
Yeah, visual comedy. Loses his mind.
All right, go for your last one.
Then the last what about when, we're going to end on a dramatic one because it's my favorite scene in the entire film and it's been parodied to death. Like Family Guy has parodied it and it's been done to death, and it's when Neil goes on that first real hard-hitting tirade at Del in the hotel room after he's clearing his sinuses. Del fires back with the "you want to hurt me" speech, and it's just, this is the moment that made me really really miss the fact that John Candy is not with us anymore, and that he didn't get to do like a proper drama. Because the acting that is on display here is awards worthy. Like it is looking at his eyes and the pain and sadness that he has on display is just so endearing, and you really feel for this man where everything he says, the writing is great, the performance is perfect, the music is spot on. Maybe a little bit too much with the music, but hey, it's the 80s. What are you gonna do? Yeah, and so I have to shout out that scene. It's my favorite scene in the entire film. It tells you everything you need to know about those two characters.
Yeah.
It's just marvelous.
Yeah, it's nice. Gives you, I guess, in the spirit of it, it makes you think about things to be thankful for.
Yep.
As well. Yeah. Which it did for me, and I need to show certain people that's a thing for me as well. This is my little, I'll wink to you. Watch the episode. Yeah, I think there are lots of situations where we can all be better in our lives.
Yeah, and he's not like he's not hitting back at Neil. He's agreeing with him. He's like, yes, you're right. I do talk too much. I also listen too much.
Oh, what a great line!
Yeah, that you want to hurt me? Go ahead. I'm an easy target. He's had it his entire life, but I'm not changing. I like me. My friends like me. My wife likes me. Because I'm the genuine article. What you see is what you get.
Mm.
Yeah, my customers like me. Yeah, beautiful. So sweet.
Beautiful.
Love John Candy.
Yeah. Look, I want to see if there are other things I want to add because we're coming to the pointy end of it.
We're getting real close.
Yeah.
This will just about wrap her up, I reckon.
It was a very, very nice.
Yeah.
Beautiful film.
Watch the movie.
Lots of lessons, nice morals here. Whether you want to be the whole don't look a gift horse in the mouth, or, you know, love the ones you're with and help your fellow man. You know, those kind of phrases you hear in life just to be a good person. They all come about.
Go with the flow.
Go with the flow. That was his whole motto, right?
His whole mantra.
You know, if you can't adapt to change, you're not going to...
Get out of the way.
You're not going to enjoy life. Yeah.
If you're on a journey, if you don't know where you're going, then you'll end up somewhere else.
You know one piece... Yeah. You know one piece that really kind of made me go, oh, was right at the end when Neil introduces Del to his family. And Del is really so appreciative to be there. And it's a beautiful point where he invites him back. He says, come home with me. And he walks in the door and he, yes, hello, hello. And then he introduces him to his wife. And Del's expression there, you know, goes back to that scene in the hotel. He's just so, you just want to hug him. Just beautiful. And Neil's wife says, Neil's wife says, hello, Mr. Griffith. You know, I didn't know if they'd ever spoken before about that, but just the respect that she's given him.
Yeah.
And then he replies and says, hello, Mrs. Page. It was just that really nice, quick, respectful, totally heartfelt, warm, thankful for everything, you know? And you're like, these two characters meet in the last 10 seconds of this film. And
it still means so much. There's
such a connection that they understand the importance of each other in each other's lives. So good. I want to go back and watch it and see if there are key points where we know if his wife actually knows anything about Del. Because I don't know if Neil mentioned.
Yeah, I don't think they have. Yeah, well, not like the not movie's on only an hour and a half long, and it's set over days and days, so you can't show every scene. There is like a 3-hour cut of this film that exists.
A 3-hour cut.
Like they, they shot so much footage for this film.
Wow,
like reels and reels and reels of just improv between the two of them. There is like a there's like a proper R-rated cut of the movie. Apparently,
there's more swearing.
Yeah. Yeah, and they edited it down mercifully into this really tight, just over 90 minutes.
You know, in the opening scene where he's running out of the lift and Ferris Bueller's dad says, you'll never make it, that's why I'm not on that flight.
The six.
And he goes, oh, I forgot my gloves, can you get my gloves for me? So I always, what's Chekhov's
glove?
Glove? Gun. No, the thing gun, I forget every single episode.
Chekhov's gun.
Chekhov's gun. I'm like, what is his relevance to the gloves? Okay, every time it's cold, he doesn't have them.
Yeah, so when he's sitting on the back of the truck and he doesn't have the gloves.
And they have that. And they go to the snarling dog. I love that.
We are going to add the film to the movie calendar very soon. We're going to get to it very quickly.
And at the end, after he introduces Del to the family, there's a shot of Del holding his own cap. One hand has a glove, one hand doesn't have a glove. And okay, he shook the hands of all his family members, but now he's holding his hat very, you know, I'm a guest in this house kind of way. But the camera gets a really nice, like 2 or 3 second shot of him, of a close up of his hands just there, one gloved, one not. And I like to think,
what does it mean?
Well, I don't think we'll what does never it mean. Know. I like to think that in film they do symbols like this, the same way that the antagonist will wear a black shirt and the protagonist will wear a white shirt or something like that. You know, I reckon this very was something symbolic too, you know? So it was nice. They're coming together. He's welcome to their home. Beautiful ending. Nice. Freeze frame. Freeze frame.
You can't end a John Hughes film without a freeze frame. And you couldn't have a better freeze frame than a smile across John Candy's face. In fact, Uncle Buck ends the exact same way. The same does expression. It? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Very sweet. It's perfect. We're going to add the film to the movie calendar. Thank you for making it this far. You may think you might know when Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is going to land on the calendar, being that the film is very Thanksgiving-centric. That is not a holiday that we traditionally celebrate here in Australia. It is a North American holiday. Mostly Canada and the United States do celebrate Thanksgiving. I do know a little bit of history around it because I had to learn to find out when it had to go onto the calendar. So traditionally, Thanksgiving happens on the fourth Thursday in November every year. It has done ever since Franklin D. Roosevelt decreed it in 1939. However, before that, and we're going to get a hint to what year the movie calendar is actually set here. So for those of you who have been paying attention, there have been clues in earlier episodes. Before that, it was actually Abraham Lincoln who said that Thanksgiving should go on the 5th Thursday every November. And it stayed that way all the way up until 1939, where it was changed because Roosevelt thought it might help the United States get out of the Great Depression by making Christmas shopping 1 week longer. One of the things that he did to try and help that. Now, Thanksgiving is a rotating day, but we are going to put it on a date with a caveat. The date that we have chosen for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is November 22nd. And the reason is...
I'm very silent through this that's all history right. lesson.
You're learning. This is great.
Yeah.
The reason for this date is because for ambiguous dates like this Father's Day, we put Fight Club on a day that is representative of Men's Mental Health Week, which is a fluctuating day on the calendar every year.
Fluctuating. Yes. There's an L in that word.
Did I not say fluctuating? I get what you were doing. Oh my goodness. This is going on for far too long. People aren't interested in
it's
this.
It's a fluctuating day. I think this is
really
day.
Fascinating. The movie calendar, day. The hints that we've had so far as to what the year it would be are that it is within historical reference to the history of cinema, the year that the movie calendar is set, and also that January 1st is a Monday. And now if January 1st is a Monday, then the 4th Thursday in November is the 22nd. Now, if you have a movie calendar when it's all finished, if you're years in the future and you have purchased yourself a movie calendar, first of all, thank you very much. We hope you're enjoying it. If Thanksgiving is not on the 22nd of November on the year that you are going through the calendar, that's fine. Just swap it with whatever movie is on the actual Thanksgiving date, and you can just swap those two movies. That's your out.
Yep.
Yeah, so that is your out for this one. But yeah, if we were to put this film on the Thanksgiving date that occurred when the movie calendar is set, then it would actually be on the 29th. Because the movie calendar is set pre-1939. So that is your third Ooh. Hint to when the movie calendar is actually set. So historical reference to cinema.
Mm-hmm.
First day of the year is a Monday, and it is pre-1939. We're going to reveal more hints over the next 7 years of making this podcast before we announce what it's going to be. I know, terrifying, right?
We may record a few episodes on the back of each other, but yeah. We'll release them over seven. Well, yeah. I don't know. We release
for a month. I forgot to mention at the start of this episode, we're going to give another clue as to what our December films are going to be.
We have one more episode before we get to that.
One more episode before we announce what it is actually going to be and what the movies are.
Well, let's say next week's episode first will be...
Well, next week's episode is The Goonies. We announced that last month.
Yep.
Very excited to talk about that film. One of my favorite childhood movies. This has been a really wholesome month for cinema. Fight Club is in there as well, but that's okay. But no, we announced that for December, all of the movies are going to be set with a similar theme.
Mm-hmm.
What episode did we announce that in?
One previous to this.
It was... No, it was...
not the one previous, but...
Point Break.
A previous one.
That was during Point Break.
Point Break,
and then during the end of Pulp Fiction, we announced that we had... Fight Club. I always get those two movies confused. There's a poster behind me. I mentioned that we had put a few extra things in the set during the Fight Club episode that were in reference to the films that we're going to be doing in December. Mm-hmm. And the third hint that you're going to get is that I'm going to actually give you the name of the December event that we're doing, and it's going to be called Director December. So all of the films are going to be from the same director. And we will announce who that is next week at the end of the Goonies episode. Thank you for sticking around for so long. Thank you, Terrence, for doing this with me.
Thank you, Lee, for doing this with me.
Any other housekeeping things before we go?
No. Check us out. Follow us. Tell your friends. Subscribe. Like. Do those things that people on podcasts and YouTube channels say.
You should probably do all that. We don't know how it all works. We're all still new to it. Thank you, everyone, again. And we will see you next week for The Goonies.
Yeah.
Right. Bye.
See ya.